If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
A couple quick notes before we get into the show. Of course, this week, when it rains, it pours. We had microphone issues. We had some audio difficulties. So bear with us. We pumped out the best audio we could get, but we definitely ran into some problems because, of course, that's what happens. Worst week of baseball. Why not run into some podcasting issues at the same time? Second thing, check out the social media accounts later today or tomorrow. There will be all of the pictures and videos from the June 10th event. Excited to release all that stuff so you guys can see it, but definitely check it out and share it. We're going to be planning and announcing another event coming up towards the end of the season, so definitely look out for that. And last but certainly not least, make sure you go wish Andrew a happy birthday. He is climbing the ranks to become an old man, getting closer and closer, and he tried to sneak this one by. Go wish him a happy birthday. All right, let's get into the show.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 148. The Yankees just wrapped up the road trip from hell. Scott, you think of California, it's nice and sunny, it's going to be a fun trip. That may have been the worst road trip of Yankees baseball I've ever experienced.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's like these guys went over to the West Coast and forgot how to play baseball. Pitchers forgot how to pitch. Everybody but Aaron Judge forgot how to hit. And it was just a disaster. All the fans got zero sleep all week for nothing. And it was just a disaster all around for everybody. It just sucked. And all I want them to do is go back to New York and get their mojo back, because this was a hellacious week of baseball.
It started out so good, too. Aaron Judge winning that game on Monday. That seems like eternity ago, that Aaron Judge home run on Monday in Anaheim.
You know, and there's so many opportunities where this road trip could have been different, that like very small, you know, opportunities within a game. Obviously, you could say this about any game, you know, along the way. But it just felt like a lot of these games were extremely winnable and they couldn't close the door, or, you know, they couldn't get the hit with less than two outs, or just opportunities where they really had good spots to win and they didn't. It's just like, it seems like every single opportunity for them to either let the other team back in and take a lead, or for them to just, you know, shit the bed in an opportunity to score a run. They took advantage of sucking completely all the way around.
It was contagious. Yeah. Every bit of bad baseball was contagious between leaving runners on base, the bullpen, absolutely, like you said, shitting the bed every night. I mean, between Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday's game, they had leads late in all those games and they blew it. The starting pitchers not being able to go deep in games. Everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong, including, we already touched on the Sabathia injury on the last episode, but after that, in that Thursday game in Oakland, both Hicks and Sanchez got banged up. Sanchez seems fine. He was back catching on Sunday, but we haven't seen Aaron Hicks since Thursday, and it was his Achilles, which as soon as you see Achilles, I get scared.
Well, I think also the Achilles, even if it's like a little bit sore, they're going to be very careful with it, because once that thing, if that thing ever were to go, I mean, that's a solid year. I mean, that's a horrible injury to come back from. And a lot of people don't come back from that full strength. So you don't want to mess around with a guy like Aaron Hicks, especially who's had this surgence in his career. I think they're going to be very careful with him. But from everything they're saying, they're not putting him on the DL right now. It seems like they're just letting him rest a few days. And you know, with the off day on Monday, just a good opportunity for to get another day rest. So hopefully
They're doing everything in their power, because they're down outfielders at this point between Ellsbury still on the DL.
Yep.
I mean, this outfield looks a hell of a lot different with Hicks not in there, and you got either Mason Williams or Rob Refsnyder in the lineup.
Yeah, definitely. And Refsnyder, they even have going into left field, where we hadn't seen that before. He's usually either in right or somewhere in the infield at first base, second base. But he's going over to left field. You're seeing, like you said, Mason Williams in center. It's definitely makeshift right now, for sure. With the way Aaron Hicks is going, we absolutely need him back and into that, because when you start seeing some of these guys out of the lineup, it absolutely affects the entire lineup, no matter even the guys that are still in there, because they're not getting the same protection they would if, you know, this lineup was at full strength. So it really, seeing these injuries is not only just about those guys, but it's also about the guys you hit around them in the lineup that it's affecting.
Between the injuries and every aspect of the team falling apart, it was like they were challenging each other on how to lose ball games. Yeah. Oh, you're gonna boot a ball, you're Chris Carter, you're gonna have a ball clank off your glove, watch me go give up a home run. Oh, you're gonna only go four innings, watch me go three innings. That's how it seemed on this road trip.
Yeah, and as much shit as I wanna give Tyler Clippard and just complain about Tyler Clippard, I would have to complain about everybody in the bullpen too, because everybody was terrible. There really wasn't a person in there that was great. Betances and now Chapman that's back are probably the only two guys.
People were bitching about Girardi's bullpen use all week. And I understand that Girardi gets criticism. I know we have discussed how the eye test does not support that he's, quote unquote, the best bullpen manager in baseball. But he's certainly middle of the pack or better. And you and I will never hesitate to criticize Girardi, but what's he supposed to do when no matter who he throws out there, whether it's Chasen Shreve, Jonathan Holder, if it's Tyler Clippard, they're all getting crushed. Chad Green was getting hit as well. And then Adam Warren has a sore arm and goes on the DL. Other than Betances, everyone sucked. What do you do as a manager when no matter who you put in the game, they give up runs? I don't know what you are supposed to do. Go out there and pitch yourself?
Yeah.
Is that what's going to happen? Britt, call in like Judge because he's got the best arm in the outfield. Maybe he can pitch. Like, what is Girardi supposed to do in these situations?
Yeah, no, he's got to run his guys out there and hope that they can handle it. But, you know, we all know that Girardi is one of these guys that has certain people that he has confidence in and will continue to go back and back to them at certain areas in a game. And when you have Betances, who's your closer, Chapman is done, or he's on the shelf at the moment. Warren, who's on the shelf, those are three guys that he has the most trust in by far. I for whatever reason, Clippard's probably next on the pecking order, but that's purely because he's a veteran guy, and Girardi likes his veteran guys. So there's no confidence in anybody else. So he's just trying to catch lightning a bottle potentially, and maybe get some balls hit at people. But it just didn't happen. That's it.
The fact that Chapman was on the DL, they kind of were surviving, and they were surviving at home because they bash the ball at home. They score 6.5 runs a game at home. So when you score that many runs, your bullpen has a lot of room to work with. But it took until this road trip where their bullpen was really exposed without Chapman. And think about the Tuesday game, the Wednesday game, Thursday, and even Friday's game. If Chapman is healthy, Betances is in a lot of those situations that Tyler Clippard and Chasen Shreve and Jonathan Holder are blowing, and Betances doesn't blow those games.
Yeah, absolutely. And Wednesday they score 5 runs. Thursday they scored 7 runs. Friday night they score 6 runs. You got to win those games. And you got to at least win one or two of those games.
Yeah.
To say that you're scoring that many runs and that the end of the bullpen is just letting the other team come back every single time you take a lead, it's demoralizing. And you know, it feeds into the way that the guys approach at the plate, because they have to be almost too perfect at that point, because they have to score a whole bunch of runs. And they know that because the bullpen is struggling so badly and the starters are not getting any length, then there's a lot more pressure on the bats to, you know, produce at a very high level so that they can carry the team. It's not a good situation.
I think that's what we saw Saturday and Sunday, because the bats did not show up on Saturday and Sunday. But I think we were seeing a product of fatigue, like, get me the hell off the West Coast at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I don't blame them. It's terrible.
I don't blame them one bit.
Can we just end this? I'm in the eighth inning. I'm like, can we just end this game now, please? And just leave? Let's just leave. I don't care. I just want to go.
How do you follow up a 6-game homestand, or excuse me, a 6-game winning streak, capping off a tremendous homestand when you scored 16 runs and then like 10 runs against the Baltimore Orioles? You get a dramatic come from behind win or late inning win with Judge's home run in Anaheim. How do you follow that up with 6 straight losses?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a 2016 Yankees where they have to go back to 500. You just have to find that mean. It's one way or the other. It's pretty dramatic when you see the two. But like you said, that winning streak was largely because they were just destroying the ball at a record pace. So
it was unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's obviously not sustainable. But again, the pitching was just extremely lacking in this. Because they scored enough runs to win a lot of these games.
Hell yeah. They put up 4 runs in the first inning of Wednesday's game in
Pineda's,
Anaheim.
Yeah.
If you're a starting pitcher, Michael Pineda, you go out there. You can't screw that game up immediately. And if Aaron Hicks doesn't rob a grand slam, that's even uglier.
Yeah, you're right. And that was, by the way, that catch was ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, if you look at all the angles of that catch, I mean, it just gets better and better when you see all the angles. And credit to those camera guys, man. Or I don't know if those are stationary cameras, but those are some sweet ass. That was some great footage of that catch.
You see, sometimes you see quote unquote robbed home runs where the guy might catch it off the top of the wall and you're like, yeah, I'm not 100% sure if that's going to go out. No. Hicks was like elbow over the wall. His glove was fully over the wall. That was definitely a home run.
Yeah, that one angle when you see behind the wall, you see his glove just dip below the wall and come back up. It's pretty sweet.
That was still the best home run robbing catch I can remember. And of course I'm drawing a blank on his name. He played for Texas and he like climbed the wall and like twisted his back around. It was he had a junior at the end of his name, and of course I can't remember.
Gary Matthews Jr.
Yes, Gary Matthews Jr.
That was a sick catch. Play? Yeah, I do remember it.
Yeah. But speaking of the Yankees now dropping to 16-20 on the road, they have the best home record. I think it's 22-9. There's no better example of home road Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Mr. Jekyll and Hyde is Michael Pineda. 46 innings pitched at home, 1.96 ERA, 190 batting average against. On the road, 31 2/3 innings pitched, 6.25 ERA, and a 3.21 batting average against. Explain to me how that is the same pitcher.
I don't know. Someone on Twitter was comparing it to like AJ Burnett, where he was so good at home and just when he goes on the road, just complete disaster. I don't know how that. I mean, it's the same distance, right? It's the same like mound and it's the same distance. I'm pretty sure. Who's catching? Do we have a personal catcher situation going on here? I don't know. So I don't really get that. How he pitches so well at home in a small ballpark too. To a right field. I mean, there's a lot more. I wouldn't say it's small ballpark, but there are opportunities for a lot of balls to fly out of the park.
You can get some cheap home runs at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. So it's you know, when you look at that, it's a little bit head scratching because, you know, I'm on the road. I don't know which road venues he played in besides what we just saw, but you know, I guarantee a lot of them are bigger than Yankee Stadium. So I don't know, man. It's a mental toughness thing again. It's something weird in his head.
So I figured it out. The rotation will be fine so long as we can give Tanaka 6 days rest every time. We can only start Michael Pineda at home. Jordan Montgomery needs to face a lot of lefties in a big ballpark. I mean, I guess Severino can pitch against anybody he wants, but It's like these. It's like how many guys are we going to have situations where they just flat out can't perform? And Pineda's home road splits were never this dramatic. Were they? I know he had like dramatic game to game splits where, and even inning to inning splits. Yeah. Heck, batter to batter splits. He looked like a different pitcher. But I don't. I like. I'm looking at these numbers and the like. It doesn't compute in my brain. Like my brain, it doesn't make sense. I still don't believe that they're this different.
Yeah, it's we'll talk about the start with Tanaka later too, but if you're looking at what Tanaka's doing right now, it's almost what Pineda was doing all of last year with the line just looks so strange because the ball is flying out of the ballpark so much, the home run ball, and it makes the line look weird because you see the strikeouts, you see the swings and misses, but then you see the ERA and you're like, how does this happen? Like, I don't understand. It's just like every single time you leave a ball up, it's getting crushed. And it looks like Pineda's doing that on the road as well.
There's now 3 out of 4 starts for Pineda that have been bad after a really, really good stretch.
And this is scaring me because this is the Pineda that we all know and hate. The guy that is mind-boggling, has great stuff and just can't put it together on a consistent basis.
I might need to burn the tapes of last week's episode where I put him in the conversation for a wild card start.
Yeah, dude, you're on a freaking streak with jinxing people. I mean, I tell you, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I need to start getting on that reverse jinx.
Yeah, definitely. Don't praise anybody or have any good gut feelings about anybody for the rest of the year, please.
So I wasn't duped by Chase Headley's resurgence in April, and I'm not being duped by his quote unquote resurgence on this road trip. But I was duped by Michael Pineda.
Yep, he got you.
He totally got me hook, line, and sinker.
His
next start's going to be at home, though, so that's good.
Yeah, that is positive. At least the numbers say it's going to be positive. But good for Chase Headley. At least, you know, he's coming back to the middle again. Because he's not scorching hot. I mean, he just had a good streak. It's not like he was on fire a la Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez when they were on fire.
He had a hit today, right, on Sunday. So he had 10 hits on the road trip.
Yeah. So good
more
for
than,
him.
More than most people.
No,
here's
definitely.
The thing, though, about Chase Headley. His overall batting average is about like 250-something right now.
Yeah.
And that's 350 in April, like 150 in May, and then it's back up to like 300 in June.
Yeah.
If he just hit 255 each of those months, people would kind of just ignore him and let him be.
Yeah, well, he would just be another white guy then. He's just like another dude. But it's almost like the Pineda home and road splits. I mean, it's his months.
Did Chase Headley's barber leave town for the month of May?
That's what I'm. No, I'm. This is what I was saying. I think he went back to the West Coast, got that sweet tan back, got that blowout in the hair. Yeah, you know, got that sweet fade, and now he's, you know, he was good. So I don't know what's gonna happen when he comes back, though. Hopefully the tan stays, or he fakes and bakes, or whatever. Keep that confidence up, Chase.
There was a mini meltdown of Yankee fans on Twitter on Saturday night when the news notification came through that Gleyber Torres left the game with an injury. And at that very moment, Chase Headley was able to relax in the dugout.
Yeah, that's not good.
When the injuries are no longer even confined to the major league squad, you know it's just a road trip from hell. Get the hell off the road.
I mean, it's unbelievable when you just when you look up and down what happened on this road trip, from the injuries to the losses to – it was just everything was terrible. There's nothing positive. Yeah, nothing positive.
And with Sabathia now officially on the DL, that puts a gigantic, pun intended, hole in that starting rotation.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, if you listen to CeCe Sabathia's mom, who someone was interviewed, or someone had talked to her outside the clubhouse at one point, she said that CeCe will be back in 2 weeks. That's it. He's 2 weeks and he'll be back. So if you listen to Mr. Sabathia, it's going to be a short little stint. Because from what he's saying, too, it doesn't seem like it's a bad injury. They're just making sure they're careful with it.
So he was home in Oakland. Maybe he stayed with his parents. Yeah. Stayed with his mom in Oakland. Maybe she slipped something in his cornflakes in the morning. Or no, Captain Crunch in the morning.
You know, saying he'll be back sooner than later? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. Thursday's game in Oakland, they lost in 10 innings. It was the second extra inning game on this road trip that they lost, which is just brutal. Sonny Gray, they totally let Sonny Gray off the hook in the first inning when they left the bases loaded with one out. And that's the type of thing when you're going bad, that kind of stuff bites you in the ass. And that's how you lose ball games, when you fail on little opportunities like that. They still put up 7 runs, and Gary Sanchez was the entire offense on Thursday night. But you can't let a good pitcher like Sonny Gray off the hook.
No, when he starts, he started walking guys, and when that happens, you got to make him pay for that stuff. And they didn't. You're right. And once a guy who's as talented as Sonny Gray gets a couple lucky breaks and uses that momentum, and then all of a sudden you start seeing the talent went out, and those lucky breaks are now coming back to haunt you, because now he's got his good stuff. He's settled into the game, and he becomes a much bigger problem. I mean, they ended up getting to him a little bit later, but it could have been a much different game. You're right, after that first inning, if it went the right way.
They got four runs off of him, which for a pitcher like Sonny Gray, you can't blame the offense when you get four runs off Sonny Gray. The problem is they, like I said, they missed the opportunity. So it could have been a lot worse. They could have gotten into that Oakland bullpen earlier. They didn't, but they ended up taking the lead in the sixth inning, they tied the game in the sixth inning. And then immediately Montgomery, I think it was the first pitch of the sixth inning, gives up a solo shot.
Yeah, it seems like this has been the trend, though. They get back into the game, they take the lead, the bullpen gives it right back up. Yeah, and it happens multiple times on this trip. So they just got to keep fighting. That was the problem. The offense had to keep fighting, and to their credit, they did. They kept coming back. Let me take that back about zero positives on this road trip. Let's talk about the one positive that we could potentially take out of this, is that this team is still the offense is still a resilient offense, and they never quit. These guys keep coming back and keep coming back, no matter if the lineup, it doesn't matter who's in that lineup. I mean, even with that bizarro lineup we saw on, what was that, Friday, that they still put
Friday,
up runs.
Friday, what'd you think of that? Ref Snyder leading off, Chris Carter batting.
It was strange.
Fifth.
I definitely did a double take. I'm like, there's no way this is right. But yeah, it was a strange lineup.
How does your boy Ref Snyder go from not even getting any playing time to being in the batting order leading off?
Circumstance. I don't know. everybody was on the shelf. Nobody was playing. And the fact that Ref Snyder is at the top playing, was he playing left field at that point?
He was, because it was strange. A lefty on the mound. But yeah. I think Girardi's overthinking at that point, because you're taking Brett Gardner out of the lineup at that point. And I'm sorry, when you've got all of these injuries, don't take Brett Gardner out of the lineup. He can hit left-handed pitching good enough, probably better than Rob Refsnyder at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of overthinking at that point.
Didi didn't play in that game either, right? Didi was held out in that game, if I'm not mistaken, because
yeah,
I think Torres was playing short.
Short.
So I don't really get that. I mean, you got Severino, who's probably your best option to win on the road at that point. Don't you want to throw your bullets, what you have, at that game and try to win that game, and hope that Severino can be that guy?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got Hicks and Sanchez out of the lineup.
And you have a losing streak. So that is one of the big question marks, I think, that Girardi, would question him on is just the overall, that game I feel like was a badly managed game, a badly pitched game, look, there is nobody safe from criticism on this West Coast trip. Everybody sucked, including Girardi.
Severino, I really had a good feeling about him going to that game. I thought he was going to be the stopper.
Yeah, well, he settled down. To his credit, he gave up early runs, and then he battled back. I thought he was going to be out of the game in the third, fourth inning.
Well, he was up to 96 pitches.
Yeah.
I think it was 96 pitches to start the fifth inning.
Yeah, so what, he got through six, right? I mean, he really did. And you could tell that he was amped up and towards the end of that he was ready to go. And I think he ended up throwing, close to 110 pitches. It was up there. And so, I like that stuff. I like seeing him battle through adversity and still show that, even if he doesn't have his best stuff or if he gets knocked up early, that he can go out there and still give a little bit of depth and fight back, give the opportunity to the offense to come back in the game. So, again, looking for positives and
because
searching for them, that's one.
I think this is a good topic to talk about. Both Tanaka and Severino failed to do their job, which was win the game and stop a losing streak. However, if you just look at what happened in those games, neither pitcher had their A stuff. Severino was able to battle and actually give his team a chance, whereas Tanaka only gave him four innings.
Yeah. And that's a problem.
And maybe, I mean, I know some people may have said look, he had 10 strikeouts. So clearly he was fooling the hitters. He gave up three home runs. He just left pitches up, which is obviously his fault. He was leaving meatballs in the middle of the plate. But a lot of people said, well, why did Girardi pull him so early? Because you could see that he was going to continue to leave balls up and he was going to give up another home run if he went back out there.
I mean, how about first pitch of the game?
Yeah, it's like
it's so ridiculous. I can't even
get comfortable in your seat and like watch a game, and all of a sudden your team is dead. That's the type of shit that demoralizes you.
Yeah, it was bad. Then he comes and strikes out the side. See, like to me, he's turning into Michael Pineda. It's ridiculous. This is what I was talking about earlier. When you start seeing the 10 strikeouts and the 10 strikeouts and 3 home runs and 4 innings pitch, you're like, how does that even happen? How do you give up that many runs, still strike out 10 people, and only go? It's just, it's so weird. It's such a strange line, especially from a guy like Tanaka that against a team like Oakland. And I guess if you look at Oakland's lineup, it's like a whole bunch of Chris Carters, I think what we mm-hmm. referred to before. It's home run or strikeout. And so it makes sense to that point. But I don't know. For a guy like that, that's just ridiculous. He's not getting any of the ground balls on the sinker. He's not getting any. It's just man. I don't. It's really really tough to watch him pitch when he's giving up the home run ball like that. It's freaking terrible.
He kind of had some momentum coming off Monday's start too.
It was a perfect opportunity. He had a big ballpark against the freaking Oakland A's that strike out a ton. Obviously, we saw that they struck out 10 times in 4 innings against them. But then he makes the mistakes up in the zone and they just hammer it. So it was a perfect opportunity for him to string 2 starts together. And to get some momentum, to come back home and really, you know, start his season finally. And he blew it.
He was on 4 days rest. So he pitched on the 5th day because the team needed him. You're paying this guy $24 million. You need him to go out there and actually be your stopper.
I tell you, though, I'm also surprised by this. I was surprised that, one, they had talked about the fact that if Severino had gotten to a certain point that they were calling up Sessa and he was going to start on Saturday so that Tanaka could start on Sunday. And I thought that was the plan. I thought that was going to be, especially once I saw Severino go 6, I think Sessa got up at some point on that Friday game. He didn't come in the game, but he got up to throw. Like I want to say it was in the 8th or the 9th inning, but he was there ready to go. I'm surprised that they didn't start Sessa on Saturday and have Tanaka throw on Sunday so that he could have that extra day. I am surprised that they didn't do that.
I think they wanted to stop a losing streak.
Yeah, but they know what they're messing with fire at this point. When you're
deciding between Luis Sessa and Masahiro Tanaka,
right?
I mean, that's an easy call.
Is it? Is it?
Should be.
Is it now? It's not right now.
So you would have started Sessa.
I would have started Sessa on Saturday just so I could get Tanaka right again. I'm just trying to get him right at this point. And right, if that's giving him an extra day to get him right, then you know, to get that confidence up. Because I do believe it's an execution confidence thing. And I think it's important that he does do well and they put him in areas to succeed at this point. Yes. Yes. Well, I'm saying we have to coddle our number one pitcher. Yes.
Well, big picture. Tanaka pitching well for the rest of the season is more important than winning a single game in Oakland in June.
Absolutely. Exactly. That's exactly why. And if you're going to throw Sessa anyway at one of the 2 games, why not give Tanaka the benefit of that extra day? Why not?
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that, they ended up losing both games, so it's really a moot point. But if you just reverse the situations and Sessa went out there on Saturday and did the exact same thing where he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings or whatever it was, I think Girardi would have gotten criticized.
Maybe, but Chad Green was ready to go too. I mean, they pretty much had Sessa and Green in there to combine for a start. They were ready to go with that. And
you've got to be treating Girardi and the whole team needs to be treating that Saturday and Sunday game like it's like if we're serious about making the playoffs this year, we've got to go out and win these 2 games.
Yeah, especially if you're losing Saturday,
you eventually need to motivate yourself.
You can't get swept by the Oakland A's.
They needed to motivate themselves, and I saw nothing from them on Saturday and Sunday. They looked like a dead team. They looked like the first half of last year Yankees sleepwalking.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look. It wasn't a good look. So let's get the hell off the West Coast.
They're coming back home, so they'll probably bash the ball again. Who knows?
I hope so. They need to.
Team has a short memory.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good thing. So I'm going to have a short memory too and just forget about this West Coast trip. I'm going to forget that it ever happened because I think that's what I do every year. And just the West Coast doesn't exist to me because every time the Yankees go out there, they suck.
I think I saw you tweeting about that. The Yankees have not had a good West Coast trip in like 20 years.
Yeah, someone said the last one was
or below 500.
Yeah, 94, I think, was the last one there. So it was 9-1. And
the strike season?
The awesome. Strike season, yeah. So that's what I said, curse of the strike.
Anything else you want to talk about from this horrible 7-game road trip?
No, honestly, I think every one of us should just put this in our rearview mirror, move on, and hopefully none of this horrible baseball lingers into the players and into New York, because we need them to get back right, and some home cooking, I think, is the right thing for. Hopefully they can feast on some angel pitching.
Well, I got to tell you, my dad, I was home for Father's Day this weekend. My dad was not happy with the Yankees. It ruined his Father's Day weekend. And he's predicting by the All-Star break, the Yankees will be tied for last place with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, man, I wonder where you've got your positivity, your positive outlook. Now it all
makes
sense.
It's so funny because when I come home and I just hear my dad rip into the team, I start to defend the other side. And I'm like, now I know where Scott's coming from. Because, I mean, my dad was half joking, but at the same time, when you're looking at this team, the deficiencies really, really were clear on this road trip. So
they were, but at the same time, there were a lot of things that supported that and that went into that, as far as injuries, and they weren't hitting. Not the whole team wasn't hitting. I don't know. I think this team is too good at home, and they have too much firepower offensively to go into these really long. I honestly didn't think a 6-game losing streak was in the cards, but I guess it is. I guess it's, nothing is out of the way. Nothing is out of the question. But when you go home and you mash the ball like they do, you know, I don't know. I think they'll be fine.
My one takeaway, if I have to do one takeaway from this week, it's that they need better starting pitching. They need to do something about their starting rotation.
Yeah, because you think the bullpen will be a lot better once Chapman and Betances. Yeah, and that's a big deal. Like, having those two dominant guys at the back, rather than just one, is such a big deal. And hopefully Girardi does use the Betances as the fire extinguisher. I thought it was funny that Chapman came in a one-run game in the eighth inning tonight, by the way.
Well, before the game, Girardi said he's pitching no matter what.
Yeah. Well,
they flew him all the way out there.
I know, which is another thing. Like, why? They saw the importance of winning that game.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not only that. I mean, look at the rest of the bullpen. They were absolutely toast.
Yeah. But I don't know. It was just interesting seeing him in the eighth inning. Like, oh, here's a guy that's in the eighth inning. Weird.
You know what would have been hilariously ironic, which I was hoping for more than hoping it would happen for a few reasons. If the Yankees had come back and took the lead in the ninth inning on Sunday, but Betances would have been the closer.
Yeah.
With Chapman still having pitched, that would have just been right up Randy.
Take that, Randy. Take that, Randy.
All right, guys, before we get into mailbags, take a second and rate and review the podcast in iTunes. We're up over 300 ratings, which is awesome to see. I love reading them. I know Scott loves reading them. People who may be searching for Yankees in iTunes also loves reading them. It really helps us out. We cannot stress it enough. Take a second. Go give us that 5-star review. We really appreciate it. All right, first mailbag question is from Steven Costanza, and I have a feeling that's not his real last name. I read the article on Bronx Pinstripes about trading for Hosmer. Dude is a beast, but what are some other, let's say, cheaper options at first the Yankees could trade for? Also, what are your thoughts on a Yonder Alonso trade instead of Hosmer? Yonder Alonso is kind of like the talk of the town after we were out in Oakland.
Yeah, I think they've been expecting a big year from this guy for a long time, and he was crediting Carlos Beltran, actually, for helping him out. I think they're both Puerto Rico guys, and from what
they train in the off season.
Yeah, they train. Well, I think also Beltran was actually giving him. I think we were talking about this with somebody, or I heard it on a broadcast at some point that he was actually giving him tips before they played, like a series before they played, and then all of a sudden he's using it against Houston.
See, this is the type of shit that I hate. This did not happen 20 years ago.
What, the camaraderie or the helping of each other out?
Yeah, like the buddy-buddy helping each other out. Like, I'm not saying you have to absolutely hate every one of your opponents, but let's just not go and help the other team win.
Well, I don't know. I think there are some. I think when you have the WBC also, and they were all together on Team Puerto Rico, so there's other camaraderie that goes there. And if your buddy who's on another team from your country's team, asks you for some tips and you're working with an offseason, I mean, is Carlos Beltran going to say no to that? Probably not. I don't know. I see what you're saying because I hate the buddy-buddy stuff. I can't stand it, but I see it in some areas and I get it, I guess. I just don't like to hear about it. That's the one thing. I just don't want to hear about it. Can we just keep the shit between you? Like, don't talk about it.
Fans want the illusion that this is life or death death for the players exactly. like it is for the fans.
I don't think that's too difficult. Just keep it behind closed doors.
Just lie to us. Continue lying to me.
Yeah, much better.
Greg Bird had a setback. He had a CAT scan on his ankle again. Apparently the bone bruise is gone, but he's still going to see the same doctor who operated on Derek Jeter's ankle back in 2013. And apparently he also had an MRI on his knee because he fouled the ball off his knee in AAA on his rehab. He's having a terrible rehab. He's batting under 200. This is getting – I'm really getting nervous about Greg Bird that he's cursed. And I think between the two of us and our listeners, somebody may have cursed him.
Between – what did I do? I didn't do anything.
You allowed it to happen.
Oh, please.
You sat next to me on that couch in Tampa, and you allowed me to call him the MVP.
I cannot be responsible for the things that come out of your mouth.
Yes. You have to be. What was that, seven beers deep at that point? You can't get me drunk and put me on a podcast.
Look, it's a problem. The fact that this is still an issue, and, I mean, what is he, hitting the same spot with another foul ball? Like, this is way too Teixeira-like. Okay. I don't know what Teixeira did, if he put something in the locker, if he's in there. Like, can we move him to the opposite side of the locker room now? Or I don't know. There's some bad juju going on.
Somebody compared him to Nick Johnson on Twitter.
Yeah, that's a bad comparison. I mean, and not that it's a bad comparison. I'm saying it's a bad person to be compared to.
Yeah, injury. I mean, Nick Johnson was absolutely plagued by injuries.
Yeah, he was the next Don Mattingly. I mean, he was supposed to be the guy, and it just never happened. And Greg Bird, maybe it's that stupid cat, that cat that nobody can trust, that's putting a horrible hex on him. Can we do something about this cat? I'm not going to say anything terrible about it.
Have to pick one thing that cursed him between me calling him the MVP and his hairless cat, I would say the cat has more to do with it.
Yeah, that cat just looks evil. I don't trust that cat at all. That cat's, I think it's somebody reincarnated in that cat and is just completely giving him some voodoo curses. It needs to go. It needs to stay. Hopefully it's not on the road with him. I don't know what it's doing, but
we're getting to the point where we might not see Greg Bird until after the All-Star break.
No, it's true, because they're going to now treat this like it's been lingering and lingering and lingering. And it's so deep. Well,
so
is it a setback or is it still
rehab? Yeah, he's not rehabbing right now. He's letting the knee heal.
Right.
And then he's going to have to rehab again. So it's like he keeps taking one step forward, two step back.
But my point is it a setback or has it just been a problem still? And he was like, it's not really hurting, but it was still hurting him the entire time. Because these bone bruises, you can't see them. It's not like it's something that can really
an
be seen.
An MRI shows it.
Doesn't an MRI show?
A CAT scan. He had a CAT scan to see if he had the bone bruise. That's what a CAT scan can show.
Okay.
They need to throw his freaking hairless cat in that scan.
The CAT scans, though, I mean, that's not something that they're getting every day. You know what I mean? So it's like they're getting it now that it's still a problem. So I don't know if it ever went away.
Can I be honest with you?
It's just something horrible.
I don't have
horrible.
A damn clue what a CAT scan is.
Yeah, well, obviously it detects bruises and bones. I don't know. It shows irregular patterns of blood in a bone. I don't know. I'm making things up. But look, the bottom line is it's a problem. He's not fully healthy, and he should be healthy by now. A bone bruise should not linger this long. So I don't know what the deal is with his bones. Drink some milk.
Yeah. So Tyler Austin has been rehabbing and he has been playing well. 25 games between Trenton and Scranton. He's batting .330 with 11 doubles and one home run. To me, that's good enough to be called up and put him at first base. But I saw some tweets from Meredith over the weekend. And she said, the Yankees view both Austin and Carter as guys who can only play first base, and they don't need two on the roster. The Yankees like the versatility of Ref Snyder, who can play first, second, and corner outfield positions, because they are down with they're down an outfielder with Ellsbury and also now Hicks. And I was like speechless when I read that.
See, the problem is, you look at Chris Carter starting to fall into these home runs that we've seen on the back of his baseball card. And you start looking at, we know the batting average is what it is, because that's what, he's a low 200 guy. He's always been that guy. He always strikes out a ton. And then now we're starting to see him fall into these. Here's the problem. He was never supposed to be a full-time guy. He was supposed to be a backup first baseman. Now he's our full-time guy. We're seeing him every day. We're seeing what a terrible baseball player he is, and that how he just, you know, runs into these home runs occasionally. And it's so frustrating to watch, because you see a guy like Tyler Austin, where we've seen him come up before. And I see what they're saying about he's only a first baseman, but that's just, he does play outfield. We saw Chris Carter at right field at one point last weekend. So
yeah,
but Tyler Austin's a guy that's going to give better at bats, in my opinion. He's a younger guy that could just, I don't know, fit into this team better. Is the problem right now the $3 million?
He's less annoying. That's the bottom line.
So the $3 million, or this is a depth move? Because if you get rid of Chris Carter and Tyler Austin sucks, then what do you do?
I think right now Cashman is probably playing it safe because, like you said, if you DFA Carter, although I don't see who would pick him up, but you DFA Carter and you call Tyler Austin up and he has a setback, then you're screwed.
Yeah. But what's James Loney doing? Is he around?
Yeah.
He's usually floating around somewhere. I have no idea. I legitimately don't. Is he playing? I don't know.
Whatever. But if we're just deciding between Tyler Austin and Chris Carter, it's an easy choice.
Yeah. No, I agree. What's Billy Butler doing? Is Country Home Fried Breakfast or whatever the hell his name was?
Is he in Japan?
I don't know where he is. Again, this is two guys that I don't know where they are. What about Ryan Howard? Ryan Howard's still playing ball, right?
I did a Google search on Billy Butler like a couple weeks ago, and it's like he's erased from the internet. But, I mean, damn, he would look pretty good right now.
Yeah, he would. That guy can hit. I mean, and he could play first base a little bit. So, I don't know. If you're looking at what we have and then you go out on to see what's on the couch right now, I bet you could find a lot of the same guy. You know what I mean? There's probably a lot of that. The guy who can play first base decently with a decent glove. Is Doug Minkiewicz still playing baseball? We could find that. And then, you know,
John Olerud.
Yeah, there's a couple of these guys that we could filter in their worst case scenario. So,
hey, we saw Tino at the Dynasty event last August.
Looking pretty good.
Game shape.
Looking pretty good.
If Chris Carter is the one that sort of derails Tyler Austin's Yankees career, that sucks.
Yeah, I don't know how much confidence they really have in Tyler Austin. I feel like this is also playing to what they think about him as a player.
Well, what do they think?
I don't think they think much of him, honestly, because if they did, I feel like this is just such a perfect opportunity for him to come in and play. And I understand now we're looking at, to me now, because of what happened on the West Coast, and the injuries in the outfield, it makes Refsnyder actually more valuable because of that defensiveness. And if they're not considering Tyler Austin,
beautiful irony.
Yeah, as a guy who could go out and play a corner outfield spot, then I guess I understand that. But if that's, but I guess I don't know why they say that he can't play the outfield. It's like them saying that Refsnyder couldn't play second base when he was fully capable of playing second base.
So part of me also reading these tweets from Meredith says that say Ellsbury and Hicks are both healthy, they don't need Refsnyder anymore.
Right.
Then they may have more confidence in calling up Tyler Austin and getting rid of Chris Carter.
If they are both healthy, if Hicks and Ellsbury are both in there and they're both healthy and playing and Refsnyder's on the team, then take that as a complete knock on Tyler Austin's stock as a Yankee. Completely.
So we took the really long route to get to this, but Eric Hosmer rumors kind of floating around. He's a rental player right now. The Royals do not look like they're going to be contending this year. They don't know if they're going to be able to re-sign him. Probably not. He's at least going to test free agency. So do you think that's an actual realistic possibility?
I just don't think that the Yankees are going to be going out and trying to, you know, get a mercenary for 1 year. I don't think that's if you look at what's going on, everybody, including Cashman, has stayed the course of this rebuild, staying with the youth, staying with these guys. I just don't see them going out and giving up much for a guy like Hosmer to try to win right now. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, does bringing in Eric Hosmer or Yonder Alonso, who also Steven mentioned, really, what does that really do for you? It's kind of like putting a Band-Aid on something that isn't really the problem of this team right now.
No, it's true. I mean, first base production is an issue, but
it's an issue, but
it's not one of the biggest issues by far. No.
No, I mean, their offense has been one of the best in the league with nothing from first base. I think they could get better production out of first base, obviously, with guys even in their minor league system. Regardless, even if you stay with Chris Carter for the rest of the season, starting pitching and even bullpen depth, I would put above the first base issue.
100%. I think that's where we're looking. I don't think that they're really going to go out and find at the trade deadline, do anything with a position player. Honestly, if it's first base, it's going to be a very small move. It's not going to be anything that's groundbreaking. It's not going to have any major prospect in it. It's going to be a B level prospect and, you know, could be a guy that hopefully, like a rebound type thing. You know what I mean? It's not any, like a Matt Reynolds Mark Reynolds, somebody like that.
Dude, he's having a great season.
Yeah, he's had a couple good years, and But so obviously Colorado, but I'm saying that type of player. That's the kind of guy I could see them going out and getting and not really giving up much. So
our guy RJ loved
Reynolds. Does. Well, we had called for Mark Reynolds for a while when Teixeira was doing absolutely nothing, and Reynolds is out there just hitting bombs, whatever team he's on, Milwaukee or Colorado or wherever the hell he is. But he's but a guy like that I could see them going after. Hosmer to me is gonna be too much. Yonder Alonso is interesting because he's a younger guy and could fit more in that long term puzzle, but then you're giving up really on Greg Bird, and you're just kind of you're saying, okay, he's not in our future. Alonso, if they were to go out and get him, which would be more a lot more expensive than you know, to me that's more of a future move too. So
both Alonso and Hosmer are free agents after this season.
Yeah, so that's it's Alonso will cost.
Let's
more
put it
too.
This way: they wouldn't cost. I don't think either of them would cost a top three prospect in their system.
Well, like I was saying, I tweeted this out too. I'm hoping that Cashman was in Oakland, throwing it back with Billy Beane so that we could expose that son of a bitch as a terrible GM he is and go out and get me Alonso, get me Sonny Gray, and give him Dustin Fowler and Jorge Mateo. Done deal. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, he's been fleeced once. Why can't he be fleeced again?
Yeah, let's fleece him again. Let's do it.
How about this solution? So I was actually talking with my dad this weekend about this. Once Gleyber Torres is ready, you call him up and you put him at third base, and you use a combination of Chase Headley and Tyler Austin at first base.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. I think they should have experimented with Headley at first base long ago. I think that's something that we need to see. I mean, the guy has problems throwing the damn ball. He obviously doesn't have that, minus the slow dribblers. He usually gloves the ball when it's hit to him, or you know, it hits to either side. I think it's a natural fit for Headley, in all honesty. I think he could go over there. You don't see the power from him like you want to from a first baseman, but it seems like he could play defense.
Yeah, I just think him combined with somebody else is a better option than Chris Carter.
Yeah, I just don't want to see Carter. I'm sick of looking at Chris Carter, in all honesty. I really can't handle looking at him. His face is bothering me. His swing is bothering me. Everything about him is just pissing me off.
Yeah, we kind of touched on it, but I think if the Yankees are buyers, which it seems like they are going to potentially be buyers. They're not going to be sellers at this trade deadline. But no. If they're buyers, they're not buying first base help. I think they're buying starting pitching somehow. Somehow, some way. It might be another, Cashman's had some good moves. Like, think about Brandon McCarthy a couple years ago.
Right.
Well, he can sort of pick somebody out of nowhere that you might think is a nothing move, but it turns out to actually be value.
And if there's, you know, aside from a free fall, and the Yankees are still in this come September call-ups, I mean, the offensive side of the ball is still going to be getting better when we have September call-ups, because there's a lot of guys who could still contribute down in the minor leagues. Another guy that we haven't really mentioned in this show is Chance Adams. Like, that's a guy who's down there. I know they want to get him more seasoning, but there are guys in the minor leagues that, you know, that have some ability and can come up. I think Chance Adams is a wild card. I think he could be a guy that if he were to come up on the scene and pitch well, I mean, that's a game changer right there. So we have a potential game changer as a starting pitcher in AAA. We have a slew of position guys down there. So, you know, fixing problems within is not out of the realm of possibility at this point.
Whatever, man. If I get called up, I get called up. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, whatever. It's all good.
All right, what do we have next for the mailbags?
Next is from Zach Waters. He said, "Did you guys know that as of Friday morning, the Yankees have not been shut out in the 2017 season? Only the Nationals and Twins can still claim this for the season. Last year, the Pirates were the same team standing. Or I'm sorry, were the last team standing, and their streak ended on June 17th. Only the 1932 Yankees have gone an entire season without being shut out, 154 games at that point. Assuming I didn't jinx this streak by sending in the mailbag, how long do you think this potent offense could keep the streak up?
Hell, if they got through these last couple games when they looked like they were sleepwalking without getting shut out, I think it could go for a long time. Because one thing about this team, even when they are looking bad, they'll still hit the solo home run out of nowhere.
Yeah, there's just so many guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And to say that you jinxed it with this, you didn't. But this was the first time that the Yankees got swept all season, and I believe they were the last team standing on getting swept for the season. So one streak did come to an end. So this is the standing streak still. And no, I mean, I think it's going to happen. I don't think there's possible really an entire season of getting not getting shut out. That's crazy to me. Like, everybody on one day is going to have a bad day, and you're going to run into just a scorching hot pitcher at some point. Chris Sale at some point will probably pitch a shutout against the Yankees.
Right. And if you get shut out by Chris Sale, you tip your cap.
Yeah.
But when how do you even say his name? The pitcher Cotton. What's his first name? Jarrod?
I have no idea. Jarrod. Yeah. I have no idea.
Jarrod. When, if he would have shut you out, then you're kind of like, all right, come on, what's going on?
I mean, he had a no hitter through six. He had a no hitter through six when he pitched against us at Yankee Stadium.
And the Oakland Pen shut the Yankees down this weekend.
We made the Oakland A's look like a legitimate team. They just fired their bullpen or their pitching coach a couple days ago and like did a whole shuffle of people in their team because they were sucking so terribly. And then the New York Yankees come in as the freaking the beasts of the East, this like behemoth lineup, and they just suck. It's the most ridiculous thing that you could ever see. Their last place, I assume, the Oakland A's coming in and just sweeping the juggernaut Yankees at that point. It's baseball, Susan. Perfect.
Well, Zach, you didn't jinx it because we just read it. So if they get shut out on Tuesday against Anaheim, then you definitely jinxed it.
Or maybe we jinxed it by reading it.
It's too many jinxes going on in this podcast. So let's end it. Guys, we got voicemails coming up. So call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. Leave a quick take, question, message, whatever it is. We've been playing them at the end of the episodes, and it's been really fun. Also, follow us on Twitter at Yankees Podcast, at Andrew_Rotondi, and at Scott Reinen. Scott, are you going to enjoy the day off on Monday? Because I know I am.
I'm going to very much enjoy it. I think all of us need a breather. We all need to just kind of reset everything and come back to Tuesday and get these bats going again and start over. Let's just forget about the West Coast. This did not exist.
All right, guys, we'll talk to you in a few days and enjoy these voicemails.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
For anyone that was watching the game versus the Royals on Saturday, does anybody remember when the Yankees were up two touchdowns and Chris Carter tried to leg out a double to second and looked like one of the people trying to run around the field in a fucking mascot costume during the seventh inning stretch? He throws fucking slow. I'm positive I can beat him in a race of any distance in flip-flops. Whether it be a mile or whether it be 40 yards, somebody make it happen. I want to publicly embarrass him.
Well, last time I called, I ripped in the taco pretty bad, and I just watched the Angels game last night. Now I feel pretty bad. Hope he turns it around. He looked great last night. Judge continues to be the best thing that's ever happened to me since probably the 09 World Series. So things are looking great, looking up.
I just can't fucking get over this. Like, how is Tanaka pitching this bad this year? Like, out of nowhere, just out of the blue, pun intended, I guess, because we're wearing blue today. But seriously, first pitch home run? Come on, man. Send him down to the minors for once and get it over with. Holy fuck.
My man, Chase Headley is back. Fresh new haircut, he is back. That boy's raking. Now, if only we could get him to throw across the diamond.
Did Chase Headley just accidentally hit the ball in a clutch moment? What the hell is going on?
Yo, Andrew from Ella's Kitchen. You know, for all those people who are giving shout-outs to Pedro fixing Luis Severino, how about a shout-out to Torrey Hunter and Rod Carew for fixing Aaron Hicks? Also, Michael Kay Show interview that I saw the other day. Brian Cashman actually said that Carter is the best first baseman on the major league level. Really? I love Cashman, but that's delusional. You have a guy in Tyler Austin who's hitting over 300 in the minor leagues, healthy, has experience up here, opposite field power. We already know this. So why the fuck isn't he up?
Hey guys, this is Cherish from Philly. Sorry we missed the event. It sounded fantastic. All my husband hears is Aaron Judge, Aaron Judge. I'm sorry, but the Phillies suck and the Yankees have real star.
Gentlemen, Jordan from New Jersey. I'm trying to keep things in perspective here, okay? I know we're not even halfway through the season. But are you kidding me? This lineup, this team, these players, I'm talking not one, not two, not three, not four. Let's go, Yankees World Series champion. Let's bring it back, baby.
So I just left the shitty Oakland Coliseum. Finally got our sweep. We guys have what? We play 8 games. Our guys are tired. You know what? We'll be back.
I am done with this West Coast trip. I get 5 hours of sleep a night. For what? To watch this garbage heap of a bullpen blow game after game I'm done. Let's get back to New York.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.